This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 290, Flying Cam. Welcome again to GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly show for all things gaming, fun, online, internet. This is Andy Piper here. We've just been talking before the show about how glad we are it's Friday when we're recording. I'm coming to you from somewhere in West London, and joining me are the two regular co-hosts of the show that I like to call the Michaels, because that is both of their names. Mr. Michael Rowe?
Well, I am just fine and dandy, Andy. So glad. Oh, that rhymed, and I didn't even mean it to. I'm so glad to have you back on the show this week. I have been watching your escapades in camping lately and enjoying those. It looks like a good and fun time was had by all. So we'll throw it over to Michael Martin.
Yeah, I'm jealous too, Andy. I'd love to be out in the woods and enjoying as well. And maybe that'll happen. The weather's getting cooler, and cool weather camping is my fave, as opposed to non cool weather camping, which is not my fave.
Yeah, in Scouts, we used to have a thing called the Polar Bear Award, which is if you were camping and it was below freezing. That was always fun.
Well, it was quite a warm few days, and it was a socially distanced campsite as well. So we, at one stage, I think, had the field almost completely to ourselves. I think there was one camper van in the opposite farthest corner. It was a nice break for a few days last week. Back at the coalface and enjoying all that the internet has to share with us.
Woohoo!
Well, there's lots to share, and to start things off with the augmented reality front, as we are wont to do on occasion on this show, believe it or not, there was an article I came across out of NHK World Daily, out of Japan, about the workers at the Fukushima Daiichi plant using AR glasses now to analyze and take a look at samples, which make a lot of sense to me, because you want to be able to quickly ingest the data, which you would think you could do with a scanner, which you can, but being able then to see the data that's related to the samples that you're looking at and have that ready in your field of vision is kind of a cool thing to do. And if you're going to be in a spot like that particular power plant or nearby, you want to get in, do the work you need to do, and get out as super fast as you can. So nice to see, so to speak, that we're getting more and more of these kinds of AR experiences out in the real world. So cool for that.
Yeah, there was a good clip on that, not that specific example, but that Microsoft showed at their Ignite conference. A lot of HoloLens AR, real world AR experiences with their new APIs and stuff. So it's coming. It's there. It's real. Nice. It's happening.
It's nice that Google Glass has finally worked out.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? So the next article that we have is something that reminds me actually of the long time ago Microsoft Office. So not the productivity suite, but was it Microsoft
Bob?
Yeah, that you could interact with these various and sundry things on your desktop. And there is an Oculus version of this, the Oculus Quest 2, using something called the Infinite Office, which is, I guess, broader than...
Is it the Infinite Office or just Infinite Office? I think it's Infinite Office.
Well, you know...
There may be others.
If you are of the Cupertino persuasion, you will call things without the definitive article very frequently, because that's just what it is. But I would say it is definitely an Infinite Office. So it's in a VR experience. You are presented with a keyboard and capabilities and dashboards and screens that hover in front of you as you have your Oculus 2 Oculus Quest 2 up in front of you.
I do like this idea a little bit. I'd have to try it. But this concept that they're partnering with Logitech to enable you to use the physical keyboard in the virtual space and have your ability to actually see yourself typing. I'm wondering whether that's actually going to hold up to, reducing some of the disconnect that you otherwise have from operating inside a virtual world with a headset. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah, the thing that I find interesting about this is the fact that you can keep your desk clean or at least less cluttered and still have all access to the data that you need. I mean, if I look in front of me right now, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 keyboards, 3 monitors, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 CPUs, plus all the other stuff that I need, like a NAS and speakers and everything else. And there's like no real workroom where I can put something down and do it. To your point, though, Andy, on the fact of bringing the physical and virtual a little bit easier together so you don't have that disconnect, I think this is where actually AR plays much better because you don't have the disconnect. The physical keyboard, if you're a fan of Logitech's K8 keyboard series, K30s, then you can actually use it and not have the screen in the way that a VR headset would have. But for those people who want to be fully immersed in that virtual space, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, Andy, just picking up on a point that you made, and I wasn't aware of the pass-through plus capability, which shows you your world in black and white. So it makes the displays pop a little bit more from a color perspective. The thing that kind of struck me here is when you think of how many gaming keyboards there are out there or other keyboards for special purposes, you know, so Michael, your situation might be that too. You could actually do a mapping of the keys that take advantage of the AR VR experience and have the keys mapped for game purposes, which could be pretty dang cool because it'd be the same keyboard that you now have adjusted.
To your point, the pass through black and white. I guess that's their attempt to solve the AR versus VR problem, and it's such a simple design choice. If you think about it, it takes less processing power to show the black and white world, so they can do that. And still allow you to take the fidelity and everything else that you need for the VR objects in the full color, high fidelity mode.
It's only a model.
It's just a model. And speaking of keyboard, could they map my my little mini keyboard here in the real world? So this is a Bluetooth one that I have for my Raspberry Pi. That's about what, less than the size of an iPhone.
Yeah,
about 4 inches, 4.5 inches.
Mm-hmm. I mean, why not? If the resolution was
map that enough. Into the big one, map that into the K80, the K830 that I can actually physically touch, but make it seem like I'm on a little tiny one.
Now, did you say it was the K830 or was it the K830?
I think it is the K830. Touché, sir.
Hey, as long as we're on some really cool visualizations, we had a really neat one shared with us by Ian of No Man's Sky. And Michael, you were geeking out on this the first time you saw it for sure, weren't you?
Yeah, No Man's Sky has been around for, gosh, I can't even remember when it first came out, but was it 8 years, 6 years? It's been a long time. And this is a major upgrade to No Man's Sky, which is a fully procedurally generated universe. And you fly from planet to planet that are all dynamically generated procedurally, and you experience things and you do some exploring and you can run into other people, and it's gorgeous. And I told Ian, I said I actually enjoyed the soundscape even more because it had that fully kind of positional immersive sound coming through on it. So very cool.
It's actually a lot younger.
Really?
But yeah, surprisingly.
God, it was such, they talked about it forever.
There was a long gestation period, and it obviously, you know, launched with fewer features than people were excited about, and it's I think one of the tweets that responded to Ian said, you know, it's nice to see that they've, you know, remained committed and they've spent such a long time building the world out without just kind of shipping it and then abandoning it. Yep. It's one of those games that I always thought looked really cool and then came out and the fanfare fell a little flat and I never picked up. And now I'm thinking, should I go back to it? I've got too many other games to play.
yep.
Is there so much stuff there now that it's actually now difficult to get started? I don't know. I haven't looked at it, but it does look...
It does seem rather infinite.
Well, that's the whole point, right? It's all procedural. I had that same problem with Spore, if you remember Spore. That had a huge thing of coming into the world of how great it's going to be, and it's fully procedural and blah, 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 blah. And so you got it, and it was kind of meh. And I was highly disappointed.
My kids liked it a lot.
It had some really cool aspects to it, but the gameplay and replayability, even though it had infinite replayability, was, you know, I played through it, I think, twice. And it became repetitive.
Once you got your creatures kind of where you wanted them, you know, you were optimizing various, you know, capabilities that they had. Yeah, I know what you mean, Michael. Even infinite games do not have infinite replayability, do they?
Yeah.
Huh. So, but there are some games that evolve over time and they have new additions and much more comes out. And we have a Microsoft Flight Simulator. We've been talking a lot about Microsoft Flight Simulator these past couple of weeks. And this highlights 40 years of this particular game. And you said the video was great, Michael, didn't you?
I loved it. So because I had a lot of the early versions of Flight Sim. Mm-hmm. And they actually go through and they show you video footage from pretty much every version. All the way back to black and white monitors with a couple of lines on the screen. To today's just incredibly highly detailed, realistic world with, I don't know if it's ray tracing, but it's pretty near to ray tracing of the reflection on the nose cone of the propeller plane as you can see cars driving by as it spins up, right? I mean, the fidelity that they've gone. And fundamentally, and I'm being overly simplistic, but fundamentally, the basics of flight and flight control have not changed in those 40 years, right? And so it's 40 years of improved graphics and more complex simulations, but the basics are all the same.
It is a really interesting, beautiful video to watch all that evolve right in front of you. Through the history of the platform. It's a game that... that I've never got into, but certainly reading about some of the stuff that's possible in the current version, and obviously there was, what was it, a couple of months ago when it first came out, the story about how they'd taken the mapping information that was inaccurate from OpenStreetMap and had a ridiculous high-rise tower somewhere in Australia and then had to fix that, you know, or it became fixed because somebody fixed it on OpenStreetMap as, you know, the other technology platform evolved as people contributed. It does look fascinating.
What I remember is I was doing consulting work in Honolulu, and I was flying back and forth between Honolulu and Atlanta every other week. And I would actually on the plane, on my laptop, fly Flight Simulator on the flight that I was flying. And it was kind of cool because you could, you know, about where you are in the flight. You could kind of look out, and it's you can see in the graphics. It's where they have kind of the checkerboard land masses was at the time. So the plane was okay, but the land masses were a little hilly with checkerboards on it, basically. But it was still real enough to experience the flight from outside the plane, which was kind of cool.
You know, those early ones were reminding me of the Battlezone game and playing that in arcades, too. So it's kind of funny. I do remember playing some of those early versions on Windows as well. So how cool. Yeah. And just seeing this improving over time. Really neat. Moving along, there was another interesting thing. I mean, a lot of Microsoft stuff here today. Mm-hmm. You got the Xbox.
This is the week of their conference, right?
You know, yeah. There's lots of news coming out. Some people I heard, you know, bought multiple Xboxes. You know, they were so excited. Well, this one is Microsoft. Microsoft buying
triple
others.
Xboxes.
So Microsoft has acquired Bethesda Softworks' parent company, ZeniMax. And ZeniMax does some interesting things. Do they not?
They're the parent company that owns Doom and Fallout.
And Wolfenstein?
Well, yeah. And I mean, they own a whole bunch of the game studios. It's interesting because Microsoft has once before bought game studios, mm-hmm. right? To really kind of push their gaming market and gaming cred. And I mean, the Xbox is good. Xbox 360 is good. I'm not a console gamer. I'm more of a PC gamer when it comes down to it. But they're buying studios by making this acquisition, and they have committed to respect the existing launch titles for other platforms, which is kind of interesting. You could easily see them saying, no, now the exclusives are only on Xbox, right? So this will be interesting to see how this plays out and how much control they take over the studios versus how much they allow the studios to just run on their own as they do right now and target the best consoles or the best platforms.
Super cool. Super, super cool. All right. Now, if you wanted to be in a game, and sometimes you feel like being in a game, sometimes you feel like playing a game, but if you wanted to be in a game, there is a new way of doing that. And this Gizmodo article that came across our feeds is a tunification capability. So it takes a picture and it allows then the AI underneath it to create essentially a cartoon version of you. And what really caught my attention for this particular article was how the subject of the article, a guy named Doran Alder, used the pictures from the "This Person Does Not Exist" site which automatically creates fake people using artificial intelligence models, GAN networks. We talked about those last week, and now tunifies them. And about, you know, three quarters of the way, halfway through the article, you can see like here's a bunch of faces of people that don't exist, and here's now the cartoon version of what they would look like passed through this model.
So here's a person that doesn't exist, creepy. And here's another person that also does not exist, but looks like
another cartoon that doesn't exist. Yes.
That doesn't look as real as the other one who didn't exist and didn't.
Well, quite some look of them. Real. Some of them look
the most
real.
Impressive thing to me was the Chihuahua potato. to me, I thought it was like, what are those blob fishes called?
Ooh.
You know, those
jellyfish?
Oh, yeah. I think they're called blobfish, right?
I think you might be right, like actually.
Or the ugly fish or whatever, right?
Just a sad blob.
That's what it looks like to me. The ocean.
Well, listeners, you must now be very keen to look up this Tunify article because you've heard the conversation about the Chihuahua potato. So.
Yeah.
You know, that's,
so go to gamesatwork.biz and you'll find it in our show notes.
Audio gold there from the show once again.
No, the thing that's interesting to me is what features the tunification focuses on. So as an example, they have Robert De Niro, and they tunify Robert De Niro, and somehow he becomes cross-eyed.
Right. He does, and he looks a little more like Leo Laporte, too.
We'll just let that hang right there.
Yeah, right. Just let right there. Leo, we love you.
I think that the Leonardo DiCaprio one actually looks really good, even though it's also slightly cross-eyed.
Yeah.
Are cartoons cross-eyed?
But isn't it just really taking the work that a caricaturist does, you know, in Times Square as a tourist thing? And I mean, obviously it is impressive that they're able to do it in technology and create those, but I mean, people that do caricatures do focus on features, right? And overemphasizing features in an amusing way. So
and they do it in 10 minutes or so,
right?
Yeah, So is it really that impressive, is what we're saying?
I find it a bit terrifying, to be honest. But fun. And as Michael said, you know, if it's the kind of thing that can produce a, you know, a workable 3D model for some kind of in-game or virtual office or infinite office kind of environment, it might work out.
Yeah. It could fill the soccer stadiums or the baseball stadiums or the football stadiums, and it won't be cardboard anymore. It could just be a whole audience of virtual people that don't exist.
You could just overlay them. That's true. And some of them are quite bad, but some of them are actually halfway decent. I mean, there's that one set in the middle.
Damn them with faint praise. Well, no, it's actually not that horrible.
No. I mean, look, the potato. Come on, get real, right? But others is actually pretty darn good. And if those were created directly from the model without extra intervention, you know, hats off. Now, the thing that I thought was really creepy and a little terrifying. Strange and scary, Andy, thank you for the setup on that one, is there is a new home cam that is that will fly around your house and film various things. So instead of having a camera mounted somewhere up on a wall with a fixed point of view, you now can find from Amazon a combination of the Ring technology, maybe some of the Echo technology too, and camera technology to fly around your house and look at things when you're not there.
Well, or you can have it. Can't you summon it while you are there and say,
"Yeah, look at
yo, A word, come over here and let me ask you a question."
Maybe, or maybe maybe it would be a thing like that would say, "Hey, go check out the back door to make sure it's closed and locked." Or you might say, "Could you see if there's a pot on the stove? You know, did I turn the oven off before left on vacation or something?" So there are definitely good use cases for. What do they call it? An autonomous indoor camera that will automatically fly to a predetermined areas of the home, giving you multiple viewpoints with just one camera. So, yes, it could.
And there was actually an interesting article, and I didn't get to read the whole thing, but the latest U.S. Air Force jet fighter, which was just released, that was fully developed through simulation modeling outside of the real world before its first flight, similar to the Dreamliner
from Boeing.
With the improved ability of drones and autonomous flying, just imagine you could mix it with this Amazon device, and you can fly to different countries around the globe and take quick interventions and fly back and have your camera.
I suppose so. But this is definitely not on my list of things to put in my house.
Oh, come on.
No, we talked about this before the show. Michael would like it if it was shaped like a spider, but he doesn't like the fact that it can fly.
Because then I'll have a real reason to be creeped out.
Yes.
I wonder what the distance is on this guy, and if it's controllable too, or if you have to just say, go look over here. I'll read a little bit
You'll
more
You'll have
about
to buy one and let us know.
Give
us a review.
I'll get right on that.
Yes, I'm sure you will.
All right, so dashboards. Michael, we got a new one here called Meeting Bar.
So this is actually really, really cool. Yeah. So this is an open source project. What it does is it works on the Mac. It's all the source code. And it becomes a icon on the top bar on the Mac, and it queries across all your different meeting services and calendars to build a single combined view to allow you to launch all the different meetings. So, because I'm working with different customers, sometimes I'm on WebEx, sometimes I'm on Zoom, sometimes it's on Hangouts, sometimes it's on Teams, right? And it deals with all that in an easy way, and it just floats up there, deals with all the credentialing, et cetera, and allows you to, with a couple of clicks, generate new meetings with your thing of choice. It's just kind of a cool source code project for people to look at, play with it. It's open source. They're looking for contributors. I've been playing with it for about a week and a half now, and I thought I'd give them a shout out. It's nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Now that you've explained it, I understand it a little bit better. It's reminding me, too, of what Fantastical from Flexbits and other companies are doing these days, too, of just making it easier to join whatever that virtual session is directly from said calendar. So this sounds pretty cool that it's up there on the top. So it's you're very aware of what's my next meeting and the next
meeting. And it'll put that next meeting and it'll tell you in how many minutes it is up at the bar.
Nice.
And like I said, it's open source. It's free. It's not. I mean, Fantastical has great feedback on it. I've never paid for it. Never used it. Don't want to buy a subscription for a calendar app when there's a calendar app built into my operating system. Even though I've paid for a couple other ones like BusyCal and others over the years, I just tend to go back to the base one. But this was interesting. And like I said, it is open source. And if you want to learn how that's handling within a Mac environment, it's good source code to look at and get familiar with.
I've been a Fantastical user myself. I'm now using an app called Calendar 366, which also works really well for me and has similar features in terms of aggregating third-party services. But again, now you've explained it a little bit more, Michael, especially around the online services and the one click to create a new meeting on a service of your choice. I think that does sound pretty useful.
Yeah, it does.
So and obviously it's always great to have open source and free stuff. I see that they are also taking sponsorships through GitHub sponsorships and Patreon on the repo. Yep. So I hope people who are able to will support them as they build that out.
And it's all in Swift. So again, even better. At least if you're trying to learn Swift.
Nifty. And now that I've scrolled down a little further, because I was looking at their main page up at top, I can see the user experience, and that's pretty cool as well. Like joining next meeting to just do Command J. Love it.
Cool.
So next thing that's definitely a love is this Lumos Matrix. So this is not Lumos as in the Mario World, Super Mario World equation. This is something a little bit different, but it is something you wear on your head like Toad does. It is a bike helmet.
Yes.
Michael, does it have something in the back as well as something in the front?
Yes, it does. It has a full digital readout in the back.
Oh, look at that.
So, turn signals, brakes, etc. It has a small little controller that you can use in your hand while biking or that you can mount on your bike. Mm-hmm. We've talked about similar helmets in the past for like the complex of the AR-based helmet for motorcycling. And then other simpler ones like this. I think it's like $250 is what they're marketing this for.
Right.
It looked to be interesting and simple enough and not too crazy stylistically. So it just looks like a bike helmet with a light visor across the top so you can see ahead of you and a brake light on the back with digital readout to change. I just thought it was kind of cool. It was one... as people are socially distancing, it'd be nice to let people know when you're going to stop, especially since very few bikers know the commands anymore, and even less drivers follow them. Right?
Yeah. Well, the hand signals what you're thinking, right? Yeah. Yeah. I tend to agree.
And you couldn't see them on the podcast. I was moving my hand down
the commands, the gesture control, right? So yep. Does this detect braking too? Does it like throw up that or no?
No, I don't think it detects it based off of an accelerometer, but I'm not positive. I hadn't gotten that detailed into the device.
Yeah. Well, it says there are automated brake lights, but I don't know exactly.
Well, then yes, it does.
Exactly how that works, but
okay.
It's got it has the space there, Andy, to be able to display a message.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So I like the idea of damn close.
Well, I like the idea of something which very practical, which they list in the example here, which is a simple scrolling message like biking with kids to make people more aware and pay more attention. Hopefully, it does look interesting. It looks more interesting than I thought when I saw the picture at the top of the article. Now that I've read more about it.
Yes, exactly. A big plus one on this here. Now that I've seen all the detail, that's I like.
You can't judge an article by its title and picture.
Well, you know, most people do. They're like, oh, you know, enough of that. So
let me retweet cool. it, or let me post it, or
so back off.
Well, like speaking of judging things by its picture and title,
no,
you found a great example from the High Republic.
Yes, so not out yet, but coming soon to places and viewing opportunities near you, one way or another. The next in the Star Wars sequence that deal from the books that are part of the Star Wars: The High Republic, which is set at a time when Jedi weren't the ragtag fugitive set of people out in the fringes, but rather large and in charge. There was a really neat design element here that kind of borrowed from the design qualities of Kylo Ren and that weirdo red lightsaber with the hilt coming out from either side, which were also lightsabers, to say what might have been during the height of the Jedi, and how, what might be one of the leader's lightsabers look like. And this is just a really neat rendition of that, which I enjoyed looking at.
And this one makes sense. This one makes sense, right?
It does.
Because it's got the little arms that pop out to the side. That a foil or a sword would have, that then hold the light beams from the lightsaber.
Exactly.
Instead of just shooting out into nothing land.
Right, right. So you could probably damage this lightsaber if you hit it the wrong way. You know, well, you could take the metal out, right?
Yes.
And then you wonder what would happen. But, you know, maybe that'll be part of a fight scene where this might show up. So,
yes,
super cool. And we're going to have our moment of Lego here as we're rounding things out for today. We've got a pair of them. I missed Batman Day. I feel terrible. But you can celebrate Batman Day every day with this 3,300-piece Lego set of the Batwing.
I don't understand how it needs to be that many pieces. I'm just looking at it, and it seems like a fairly simplistic build. But it's actually much bigger than my
big.
Brain.
It's
huge.
It comes with a wall mount so that you can hang it on the wall like the Batman symbol, like the Batwing. And it's a lot of... there's a lot of detail, although it doesn't, when you look at it flat, in some of the images, it doesn't look that detailed. They go into some of the information, like you've got a little tile screen featuring the gas balloons that the Joker used, and so on. And there's a lot of little intricate bits that add to the model.
Yeah, but this is the Tim Burton Batman, just for
this
people
is
to remember.
Tim Burton Batman. If you search for Lego Batwing on Lego.com, then you see some other versions that they've come out with over the years, which are not like this.
Yeah.
Yep. And the first commenter on this Slash Film article is saying, hey, the fact that it hangs on the wall might be the reason I get it, because I'm running out of room to put them all my other Lego builds.
I am familiar with that problem.
I resemble
you resemble
that
remark.
Very cool.
Well, and going then, from Batman to Star Wars to The Mandalorian, you know, there's little three steps, right? Two steps into three. Anyway, you know it. Saw this one, Baby Yoda. Giant Baby Yoda.
Giant Baby Yoda. With also minifig Baby Yoda.
I know.
I don't know.
I think it's ugly.
Yeah, I think it's... I think they've... The other Lego Yoda they made, you know, similar like brick buildable model. I also think it's his face is very difficult to capture in bricks. It turns out, whereas something like Iron Man or Boba Fett, both of whom I have, hold on, my Boba Fett model to my co-host here.
My Iron Man
is downstairs
nice.
On the on one very of the,
nice.
the bookshelves and. You know, they're much more easy to build. I think when they're trying to make a realistic face out of bricks, it's a bit more difficult.
Yeah, yeah. So who's ready for the Mandalorian season 2?
Oh yeah, definitely want to see.
Okay, just checking. Really enjoyed the first season. Can't wait for the second. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week. Thank you, Andy. Glad you were able to join us again.
Yes,
good to be back.
It's always been too long. We appreciate everybody's constant feedback and information that we get from you. We thank you for all your posts and tweets and comments. And Andy, is there anything people can talk to you about? Anything interesting going on your side of the pond?
What have I been up to? I have got so many electronics projects that I Lego projects that I haven't had the time to get back into. So yeah, just really honestly, it's kind of boring just trying to get through life admin at the moment. But got some interesting things I want to work on soon as well. There's a couple of interesting projects where you can flash Python, MicroPython onto the Lego controllers now, electronics controllers, cool. and start to do some cool stuff there. So might get into that.
Sounds great. Well, thanks everybody, and we'll talk to you, or talk at you, I guess, next time at gamesatwork.biz. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.